On today's podcast, we have one of our Academia Careers coaches on. Her name is Kelsey Waldrop. She has a phenomenal career, working a lot of her career at Accenture, helping individuals within that company to grow and develop their career. She's a career strategist. She really thinks very thoughtfully about how individuals should grow and develop their career. And a hint for you, it's heavily dependent on relationships. So something near and dear to my heart. Let me just remind you that there are a few ways that we at Academia Careers can help ambitious professionals get a better job quickly, confidently, and with lots more money. One, we have personalized coaching where you work with us until you get a better job. You will be assigned or matched up with a personalized coach, someone that is as amazing as Kelsey, and then we help you negotiate your offer, and then we help you in your first 90 days. Secondly, if you're more into group coaching philosophy, we have a group coaching program that works with you for 6 months that gives you all the information, all the support, the community as well to get those interviews, offers, and money. And finally, if you are someone that likes to do it yourself at your own pace, we have a digital course called the Job Acquisition Method, which has been specifically developed to get you more interviews, more offers, and more money. You can find out about all of our different solutions that will help accelerate your career at kadimacareers.com, K-A-D-I-M-A, careers.com. And with that, listen to this episode, enjoy it. And if you like it, rate, review, share it with your friends. That is how we can achieve our mission at Academia Careers to accelerate 1 million careers by 2040. So listen to the episode. Hope you like it. Reach out to me with any comments or feedback. And the last three words I'll leave you with before we start this episode, own your career. Hello, and welcome again to another great episode of the Sick Career Podcast. Today, I'm really excited to have Kelsey Waldrop on the Sick Career Podcast. She's a career strategist. I like these different terms rather than a career coach. And I think she's a lot more strategic about people and their careers. So with that, Kelsey, let me hand this over to you.
Thank you for having me. So like you mentioned, I consider myself a career strategist, also a career coach. I grew up in management consulting. I spent many years interacting with clients as they went through major transformations, major transitions. I have always had a passion for just the way that people think and how that drives certain behavior and how change happens. How does change happen? How do people that manage change do differently than those that don't? And what really transcended over the course of my career is a passion for change, a love of transformation, and just a servant heart that really wanted to take everything that I learned over the course of a really successful career in consulting. And how could I take what major organizations know about change and transformation and bring it to people as they navigated transitions and transformations in their own life? So it's been a career that's been building. If you would have asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I didn't know this was a thing, never knew this was a job, wasn't at any career fair that I ever went to, but it is a career of my design and it is a life of my design. I'm passionate about what I do. I'm excited about what I do. And I get excited about helping people find that for themselves as well.
Awesome. And similar to me, before you went into career strategy, career coaching, you had a pretty illustrious career at some pretty impressive logos. So you were at Dell, BP, Chevron, Accenture. Talk a little bit about some of the companies that you worked at and what you learned from those organizations and what you take into your career strategy.
Yeah, my first project in consulting was actually doing quality assurance and reviewing web pages that were in Spanish to make sure they didn't have any errors. And I don't speak Spanish. I definitely learned how to swim with sharks and kind of dive off the diving board and learn how to swim. That was my first role. But as my career evolved, I really moved into the change space. And what I've really learned is there is a rhyme and a reason. There's a method to change that applies to these organizations. And so really where I found my niche and just grew my expertise was in talking to leaders in a very real way. And I think that's one of the strengths that I bring to the role is I'm very real. I'm very direct. I'm very comfortable having tough conversations. And so by working with clients, Bank of America, you mentioned, BP, P66, Chevron, EMC, these are some pretty big hitting clients. And to be able to walk into the office of a business leader, of a C-suite member of the executive leadership team, and talk to them about change and what they need to do differently if they're going to expect people to embrace these ideas that they have, really helped me to cultivate an understanding of how do you talk about change? How do you apply change at a really individual level? And what I realized in doing these large transformations is it comes down to people. It comes down to individuals. And where does their motivation come from? Comes from how we think about things, how we feel about things, and that determines how we act about things. And so learning that in major, whether it was technology implementations or big process changes, watching companies try to merge together and find the best of the best and sort out the rest is really something that I apply now when I'm looking at career strategies. What has worked? What hasn't worked? How do we capitalize on what's good? And how do we overcome whatever it is that's standing in the way of progress, growth, and change? And all of those same principles can be applied at a very individual level with the same degree of success.
What are some of those obstacles that do get in the way of people making changes in their careers?
Mostly it's fear, right? That's where I really see people become their biggest obstacle. And you can put obstacles out there. The market is tough. That there's a lot of people that are searching for jobs right now. I came to an organization that rejects new hires, whatever it is. But a lot of it is around mindset. How do I view myself? How do I view the environment that I'm in? How do I interact with the people that are around me? And therefore, how do they respond to me? There's a book, Design Your Life, and they call it gravity problems. You can't solve gravity. So what do you take as given? And then what's in your control to change? And the biggest thing is how I think, act, and how I view the world around me. And when you can shift that thinking, even just a little bit, and you start to see how much something changes, it becomes fuel to try the next thing, to make the next change, to take the next risk, if you will. But just even getting over that very first little hurdle is actually the biggest hurdle that you get over. So helping people get over their fears and reframe the way they think about things, to me, is the biggest obstacle.
Yeah, I see that too. What are people fearful of? What's preventing them from changing? Because I have some hypothesis, but I want to hear your perspective first. Like, what are some of the common things that they're fearful of that is preventing them from being proactive and taking control of their career?
Fear of being uncomfortable. Fear of unknown. So when you get on a airplane to go somewhere, you don't see the destination that you're arriving at. But because the airline has flown a million times that same path, you blindly get on this tiny little capsule and you have faith that you're going to arrive at the destination. So I think getting people to a mindset of it is okay to get on that airplane of change or of risk and maybe not know exactly where it's going to end up. Things change all the time. Getting comfortable being uncomfortable, I think, is one of the biggest fears. And fear of failure. Even if they have a history, 25 years, success, success, success. What if this is the one time that I fail?
Yeah, no, I see that too. And the fear of change is interesting because I think people underestimate the fear that they should have at their current role because people get very comfortable at their company, comfortable in their role, and then they could get rift, like a reduction in force, because even though they're comfortable, the company is still moving and changing and they don't have any fear about laying off 12,000 people like Google did last year or 18,000 people like Amazon did or Goldman's laid off lots of people in the past. So people, I think, underestimate the fear that they have of being where they're at. They have a false sense of loyalty or security with where they're at and that prevents them from maybe taking some proactive action that would actually reduce and mitigate their risk.
That false sense of security is super interesting. I think, again, it goes to what is our mindset? What is our frame of reference? And I think there's still a mindset of if I job hop, right? If I go after another opportunity and I've only been somewhere a year or two, how is that going to be viewed? And the fact of the matter, in today's world, it shows that you're agile. It shows that you're moving, that you're learning new things. My dad, he stayed at his same company for 25, 30 years. It was a different time, but staying stuck in old ideas or old ways of thinking and working may no longer serve where you are at or where the world is even at. And it's a fast moving world. It's changing faster than ever. And we have to be able to change with it.
And very similarly, my dad was at his company for 38 years and then they got acquired by a big French bank and he eventually got laid off and after a 38-year career at the same bank, and he didn't know what to do because he had not searched for a job for 38 years and Kadima Careers didn't exist then. So he had no idea what to do. It didn't have the support and he was lost. So he probably had the right sense of security and stability there because he was there for 38 years. But having that nimbleness to your career, and not that you need to move every year, every 2 years or so, but staying put is a false sense of security because the company doesn't feel any more loyal to you necessarily because Agreed. Of that.
There wasn't Kadima. There probably wasn't coaches the way that there is now. That's a bit of a new thing. But I think that's one of the other major fears that hold people back is fear of asking for help or fear of saying, I don't know, and I need help navigating the job market. I need help exploring, am I where I'm supposed to be? Is this the career? Is this the role? Or is there something more for me out there? And so tapping into our network, our support, and our resources, I think people get afraid to ask for help. And you and I talked about this yesterday on my podcast. Most people really want to help. It's a compliment to us when people come to us and want our skills and expertise. So I think the fear of showing weakness and of asking for help can also keep people from really moving as fast and as big as they possibly could if they tapped into the support that they have around them that wants to step up and help them.
Yeah. And I'm guessing you see this a lot too, Kelsey, in your work. So when someone comes to you or reaches out to you for some career strategy or career coaching, they've already probably overcome a little bit of the fear to even reach out to you. What are some tips that you have for people to overcome the fear of owning their career, of being more proactive of their approach, even before they come to you? What are some tips or tricks that you give people to overcome that fear?
There's a couple of things, right? And part of it is just starting. What is the smallest thing that you can do? What is the smallest thing that can help you just even consider, right? And that's sometimes the first step is what if you made a career move? What if you did something that you got excited to wake up for in the morning? What would that look like? And you don't have to do anything about it. You're not committing to anything. You're just exploring the idea of it. And you're exploring, how big could I go? And sometimes the bigger you go, the easier it is to go, maybe I could just do a little bit. Maybe I'm not going to be a millionaire that works 2 hours a week, even though I read the book and it was great. What's one small thing? One small thing is just to consider what it could look like. And you start to get excited about it. You start to get excited. What if I became a writer? What if I moved to a nonprofit? What if I did that? What if I, instead of applying for a role that's at my level, what if I jumped up 2 levels? What would that do for my life, my kids, my career, my confidence, all these things? And just even allowing yourself to consider it. And then maybe I'll put a resume in. Maybe I'll talk to somebody in my network about that opportunity. Those little things, like, they add up. And all of a sudden you're like, that went well. Let me try the next thing. That went well. I'm gonna do the next thing. And all of a sudden you're like 10 steps ahead of where you would have been at if you hadn't started even considering and allowing yourself to consider that maybe it is possible.
And it's a shame too, because I think people that are in a comfortable job are probably most comfortable and maybe most fearful of change. And that's actually when you have the most leverage to make that change. Because if you do have that good job, that good opportunity, or the bad, the best alternative to a negotiated agreement, you actually have more leverage in your job search rather than someone who, like my dad, got laid off after 38 years at the bank, or your father as well, 25, 30 years at a role. once you get pushed off the cliff by a company against your will, I guess all the fear gets tossed out, because then you have a fear of, oh shit, I gotta like put food on the table for my family. So that overcomes a fear. But the best time to probably approach the job search and job acquisition is while you actually have a comfortable opportunity at sitting in your back pocket.
1,000%. Options are power. When you have options, you are in a position of power. And the more options that you can create, which I think is also true if you are in the job search market, not single threading, right? Diversify the opportunities, even if it's just for experience, even if it's just to find out some new information. But 1,000%, the best position to be looking for a new position is when you already have one. And there's just a confidence that comes with that as well, that kind of changes how you approach people, how you approach conversations. And if you are in a good role right now, it's the perfect time to be thinking about the what ifs. If you're job searching, it's also a time to think about what ifs. That's where growth comes from, is at least considering it.
Yeah, I always encourage people, and this goes back to your point of keeping those options open, but like always be looking, ABL. You don't need to say yes to everything, but the more options you have at your disposal, then you can take ownership and control and say, hey, do I want this option A or option B? And if you're just stuck with option A, you don't have the other option at your discretion. So once people overcome the fear and start taking action on their careers and their progress, what are some tips and tricks that you work with clients? And I know you work with Arcadema clients as well, in terms of making that progress towards getting that better job, the better promotion or whatever. So they overcome the fear. And then what actions do you think are the most highly leveraged that those individuals can use to get the results that they're seeking?
Know where you're going. I think having a direction, having an intention. Here's where I want my path to go. Because I think a lot of people kind of like, well, maybe this, maybe this. Once you get a direction, right? And it's going to change. Paths change all the time. But setting an intention and say, I'm driving towards this. This is what I want. Here's why I want it. And then backing in and saying, here's what it's going to take to get it. Here's who I need to surround myself with. Here's my strengths. And here's the areas that maybe aren't so much my strengths. I'm really big on the support network, right? And it can be coaches, it can be peers, it can be mentors. It can be people that have worked for you in the past. I'm really big on the 360 picture of people in your support network. Pull in all of them. And I used this quote yesterday, ask for money, get advice. Ask for advice, you know, get money twice. People love to give advice. So I love the idea of have an intention, rally the troops, create a tribe around whatever it is that you're trying to do, and just tap into the amazingness that people can bring, because that's what fulfills them too. And that helps you down your path as well. So those are two things I just think, know where you're going and know who you've got in your tribe that's there to help you.
I think goal setting is so critical. Like Stephen Covey talks about in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Number one is be proactive. Number two is start with the end in mind. So understand where you want to go, because otherwise you're just walking blind in a forest and not really having a path ahead of you. So that's very interesting. Looking back at your career, the last corporate role you had was at Accenture as a senior manager, global career transitions. So talk to me about that role, because my hunch is that involved a lot of internal mobility with people within Accenture. But what does global career transitions mean? And why was Accenture paying you good money to focus on global career transitions?
It's a role that I created. The role that I was in, I moved organizations within Accenture 4 different times because they didn't know where to put what I did. And so while I grew up on the consulting side of the business, I left Accenture at one point and said, I don't think I want to be in consulting. I don't want to travel. I was starting a family. They called back and they said, we've got an issue, a problem that we want you to help us solve. You know the organization, you know change, and we need you to help us with an investment that we're making in senior hires. We want you to come back and help us solve why are 80% plus of our senior hires leaving within 3 years. And it's funny because that was a turn in my career that I never expected and has become my passion project. This was before I even became a coach. It's why I became a coach, because one of the lessons that I learned very early on was it wasn't about a playbook. It wasn't about a manual on how to be successful. It was about mindset and how people, both the organization and the individual, needed to act differently if we were going to retain that talent. So at the time, I was a contractor. I was hired to do this special project. We did it well, learned a ton, failed forward on my face multiple times, but really cultivated a role that said, we need people to help senior leaders be successful. We invest a lot in hiring. How do we protect that investment? And that became my path to coaching. You have talked about like role description names can be a little deceptive. What exactly does a global transitions person do? I was the integration coach for over 400 of Accenture's leaders as they joined the organization to make sure that they were successful and to make sure we retained the highest degree of talent and that we could go out to market and say, this is something that Accenture does well. If you come here, we are invested in making you successful.
So not only were you helping Accenture to retain its talent, but Accenture was looking to market those services to external clients as well to say, hey, Coca-Cola, we can help you retain your top talent. American Express, we can help you retain your top talent. So is that how Accenture was looking at it?
And that was, that was part of the idea. And again, because there's a lot more senior hiring done today than there ever has been in the past. It's no longer a mailroom to CEO path. People make moves at very senior levels. And while a lot of organizations have good onboarding programs, which I consider in the hierarchy of needs, that's kind of your food and water. Do we get people onboarded? Do they have technology? Do they know where the bathroom is? Whatever it is. But what was missing was that gap between I'm hiring a senior leader and I need them to come in and generate some revenue to have some impact. And we were missing that piece of the puzzle. So I think that was something really unique. I respect the organization tremendously for the investment that they made in their senior hires and that they made in me to become a coach that not only knew the process, but could coach people on the mindset of how do you successfully transition into a big organization, have impact, and go out and do amazing good work and stay.
Accenture had this issue where I think you said 80% of the senior recruits were leaving within 3 years. What were some of those key reasons that you found that were leading to all this turnover? So Accenture is paying a lot of money, and all companies pay a lot of money to acquire talent, and to see it leave within a few years is not the outcome they were seeking.
I commend Accenture. It's one of the few and best organizations I've seen to do this. Because one of the first things was hiring sponsors take ownership for the hires that you make. And you need to be the person that guides them through the first year. You need to be their advocate, their mentor, the person to help them read between the lines of how do things really work. And so the first thing was really leaning on the organization's leaders to say, you wanted to hire somebody, you're accountable for their success. And to reinforce that at the most senior levels of the organization. So that was organizationally speaking. You know, again, this is where I came up with landmines and gold mines. And when I came into the role, I said, what is the difference between those that succeed and those that fail? How do we do more of what people that are succeeding do and less of what people that fail do? And it boils down to 5 critical success factors that we proved or disproved over time. And you and I talked about one of them, which was clear priorities and aligned expectations. So as you come into a role, are you clarifying what I thought I understood to be important and how I thought I was going to be measured? Are those still the right things? Because we're seeing organizations, roles change. Like we are in so much change. So when new leaders come in, let's clarify those expectations. Let's be real crisp on priorities and let's make sure that everybody's talking the same language sooner rather than later and that we're putting in place conversations 30, 60, 90 days, 6 months to continue to clarify, are these still the right things? And to adjust the path if things have changed. Otherwise, 6 months later, you're down a path that you weren't supposed to be going down. And so having leaders take ownership of that and to check those expectations was one of the first really key differences that I saw.
That was one. And I think you said there were 5. So number one was like priorities and expectations were either off or misaligned or not clearly communicated. What were some of the other four factors that you saw?
Quick value, quick impact. You have a very short amount of time when you land at a new organization to deliver value and to build credibility and confidence. And I think they're both equally important. How much does the organization and the team believe in what you can do? And what do you think that you can do within the organization? And you need that pretty quick. And so one, how do you identify some pretty rapid ways to add value? And also, how do you diversify that with I always say, it should look like your investment portfolio. What are your quick wins? And what are your long-term bets? Like, where are you really going to contribute in the long run? How are you part of the strategy in the long term? And let's make sure you're working both of those, but you're not going too short and you're not going too long on your plan when you get into a new organization. And sometimes those quick wins aren't financial. It helps when they are, right? They're tangible. But sometimes the ways that you can contribute, bring in a new relationship. We're going after a client that we've never had before, and I've got a relationship with the CEO. I'm going to help introduce you to that CEO and bring you into their trust fold. That's a quick win, right? It might not be selling of a deal, but that's a way that you've added value. Bringing a team with you, bringing contributors with you, helping to strengthen the organization. Those are wins too. So it's not necessarily, do I need to sell a big deal or do this big thing? There's various different ways that you can contribute value, but you need to figure that out and deliver it pretty quickly after you join. Number three is the 360 support network. Right? It's owning your relationships, developing those relationships, and doing it in a strategic and intentional way. I call it strategic networking, which is probably a consulting term now that I'm out of the consulting world. I dropped these things, but really being strategic about the network and every person that you meet, who are the three people that I need to know in this organization? Who can help me? Who do I need to know? And who needs to know me? And who are the three people that you can introduce me to, right? And that's where the asking for help comes in. Can you help facilitate a conversation? And you need to proactively manage that relationship when you're new. Unfortunately, senior people, they're not going to do it for you. And they're making some assumptions about what you can do in the new organization. Like, you're just going to pick up and bring what you brought before. Doesn't necessarily work that way. So owning your relationships and being strategic and making them 360, not just managing up, managing sideways. How are you cultivating trust with your peers so that they want to work with you? And how are you developing followership or loyalty from people that you can do bigger things if you've got multipliers? Who's going to be your multiplier? Figure that out and figure out what you can do for them that they can then do for you.
So clear expectations and priorities, quick wins, 360, like support, like getting that internal network, engaging and developing the network. What are the other two areas that could lead to either a positive outcome of people onboarding in the first 90 days or disaster? And maybe turnover.
It is invest in the non-sexy parts of a new role. A lot of times I'll see new leaders come in. They don't want to go to the onboarding classes with the brand new folks. I'm senior, right? I want something different. I want something more one-on-one. It is check the ego. It is check the ego at the door and realize how painful your life is going to be if you are 2 months in and don't know how to submit the time report the way that company submits time reports. You're going to be spending hours explaining and redoing. Suck it up and do the not sexy stuff, and it will save you time in the long run. And you're a team player, right? You are onboarding to a new organization. Respect the organization. Respect the processes. Get it over with. Do the compliance training. Do the technology training. Whatever it is, just do it. 30 days, check. Get it done and move on so you can do the bigger high value things, but don't skip it.
Very cool. When I was at American Express, they used to encourage us to really support our employees and onboard them and get them up to speed quickly, but also keep them on the team as long as possible because it would add more value for the company. So Accenture might be doing this because it's a good thing to do, but they were also spending all this money to acquire talent, so they want to retain it. From Accenture's perspective, the longer a good performing employee, the better it is for Accenture. But on the flip side, from the employee's perspective, they may not be getting value out of Accenture if they stay there too long. From the employee's perspective, how should they think about their time at a company? They're leaving in 3 years, so they probably gain a lot from Accenture, and then maybe they're moving on to a better company because they have the Accenture name brand on it. Before you're coaching, like you were working with the company, Let's keep the talent here as long as possible so that we can get our return on that investment. Now you're working with candidates that are trying to earn their worth. How do you advise them? Are you like, hey, you should stay there longer than 3 years? Or are there advantages from the employee's perspective of moving around?
It comes down to values. And the luxury that we have a little bit at the later stages of our careers when we've been successful is the luxury and the curse is we can wake up and say, what really is important? Like, I've earned some money. I've had some success. I potentially have some options if I've managed my network and my relationships. From a value perspective, what's most important to me? And particularly I see with women and diversity, sometimes staying with an organization where you are compensated well, that you have worked out a lifestyle and a way of working that allows you to do some of the things that you want to do and that you need to do is a reason enough, or a good reason, not reason enough, but a strong reason to stay until the circumstances of your life change. If you are valuing growth, right? And you can use that name. It's a great name. I mean, it's a stellar company. They do amazing things. How do you leverage the greatness to build on something else? And Accenture has 90% of the top 500 companies in the world as clients. Somebody that has relationships at those clients. Like, there's an amazing network to be leveraged there. And so I'm really big with, again, know your values, know your intent. Where are you trying to go and what are you trying to do? And then it's not just the name that you can leverage. It behooves Accenture if you become a client, right? They want that relationship too. So I think, you know, knowing your advantages, knowing what you have and knowing what you want and figuring out how to merge those two to create the career. And this is where the career strategies come in. What's the career of your design and how do you use what you have and the relationships that you have to make that work? Because you probably have more levers to pull than you even know.
Yeah. And I love how you talk about the relationships and the goals, and it's very aligned with the growth framework that we have at Kadima. First, establish your goals and what you talked about here, understand where you want to go. Then realistically understand your strengths and leverage those strengths, which I think you brought up as well. The outreach, those relationships, internal and external, really asking for help, seeking that support out, and people will help you. The other part of our growth framework is really about getting the job, like working the system, training and tenacity for lots of setbacks, and then the negotiation piece. But let's talk about the negotiation piece quickly, and this will be the last topic that we'll talk about here as we're running a little low on time. But what do you think the advantages are of someone staying within an organization for years versus moving externally? Because at least in my case, when I've got promoted at American Express or Google, I got like a decent bump in compensation. But when you move internally, there's usually a cap on how much of an increase you can get. When you go externally, everything's off the table. Are there any negotiation opportunities internally for compensation? I haven't seen it happen all that effectively, except when friends or clients or myself have had external offers. So where do you think you as an employee might give up some compensation opportunities in return for maybe stability and potentially a false sense or a real sense of security? Where do you think that plays into the individual in terms of their compensation trajectory, whether they choose to stay at Accenture for a while, or not even just Accenture, just companies in general, versus getting a plethora of experience across multiple organizations?
Question. Now that my experience has become a lot more diversified, I think for a long time I was very Accenture-oriented in mindset because that's just where I grew up. I literally interned there as a college senior. I've been there my whole life. But what I see just overall now is the fastest way to get a promotion and a compensation increase is to leave. If you have a highly differentiated skill, a highly differentiated relationship, what is value? Where is the value that you have? What's, again, the lever that you have that you can bring into a conversation and look somebody in the face and say, I am bringing more value. My compensation needs to reflect the uniqueness of my skill set, the uniqueness of my relationships, my marketability, of what is it going to cost if you lose me? And what is it going to cost if I stay? And you'd be able to have that conversation with numbers right? This isn't an anecdotal conversation. This needs to be a concrete conversation that's difficult, right? It's not rare, I would say, but it's unique. You need to have something pretty unique and pretty market relevant to be able to have that conversation. And otherwise, you are accepting a compensation cost with the perceived or real benefit of security. And that's the risk reward that you have to balance on a very individual level and understand what is it that's keeping you there and how real is that security.
And on the external offer piece, I found like a lot of companies I worked at, if someone came to me with an external offer, I was able to go to HR and say, hey, we really want to keep Kelsey. She's about to jump ship to Deloitte. And can we make a counter? And if the person was a high performer, all of a sudden we would bump your comp up to what Deloitte was offering in a very fast forward process. Do you guys exercise that process in your career, either Accenture or other organizations?
Yeah, so I wasn't so much on the HR side. So I was in recruiting, wherever. I know that's true. Right. I know just from experience. I know from being in the business. I know from clients. I think that's also true when you're in the job market. And that's why I'm really big on this. Don't single thread your opportunities. When I coach clients, collect offers like they are your new hobby. One, you're learning a bunch. Two, you're developing a network. Three, you've got leverage. Right. So collect those offers and use those as data and information to feed how you go into negotiations for the next role. And I think there's even more opportunity to do that when you're looking externally. Internally, yes, absolutely. It's a game of scarcity. And it's an interesting question. If you go and say, I've got another offer on the table, do you value me this much? Or are they willing to let you go? That's interesting information as well, too, about how they see your value.
Yeah. So, and you need to be prepared to leave, because especially if you were saying that you get a competing offer from a competitor. When we did that at Google, like if some people had an offer at Facebook, sometimes they would shut off their access and walk them right out and not even like counter. They're like, okay, you're an enemy now, depending on the individual. But you have to be prepared that the company will not negotiate. Yep. Awesome, Kelsey. This was a fantastic conversation, but I just want to ask you two final questions that I always like to ask my guests here. First, you've dropped lots of great advice here, especially about how to keep and maintain employees and what some of those landmines and gold mines are. But what's one last piece of sick career advice that you'd like to leave?
Advice is invest in relationships. No matter where you are at in your career, no matter what stage you are in your job search, the investment in relationships, give and take, will pay bigger dividends than any other investment that you make. And that also includes be open to taking withdrawals out of the generosity bank that you've been contributing to for a long time and know that you deserve and you've earned that. And I think that's just part of being a partner in a relationship is being willing to take and to give.
Awesome. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. Relationships got me 24 out of my 29 jobs have led me to meet you through like a mutual relationship. We are stronger because of the relationships and the networks that we're building. And then the last question I have for you, Kelsey, Absolutely. Is where can people find you?
I'm really active on LinkedIn. So if we haven't already connected, please connect. I want to see what you are doing. I'm a learner. That is my favorite thing. I love learning from people. I would probably be a librarian if they paid better, because I just love to learn. So you can find me on LinkedIn. It's Kelsey Waldrop. You can go to my website, which is www.kelseywaldrop.com. And you can also find me on my podcast, which was Laid Off, Life On, as I move into the next stage of my life. Could potentially be rebranding, but right now, if you go to Apple, Laid Off, Life On is my podcast. And we talk a lot about career transitions, Thoroughbreds Run with Blinders, a lot of topics that are relevant beyond just being laid off. I encourage people to check that out too.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kelsey. And thanks for everything that you've done for our clients at Kadima Careers and also getting to know you on LinkedIn, off LinkedIn, and virtually, and maybe one day in person if I'm ever down in Houston.
It is fun having you and your brilliance and your team. Your team is phenomenal. So I appreciate even getting to meet them after I met you. So it keeps going on. I'm so appreciative and I just think you're phenomenal. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for the time and thank you for helping people with their career strategies and accelerating their career. So thanks a lot.
That wraps up another remarkable episode of the Sick Career Podcast with Alan Stein. Check out past episodes and other resources on the website. That's sickpodcast.com, and it's S-Y-C-K. Alan, tell the audience about the newsletter they can sign up for.
The newsletter rocks. Check out the accelerator, XLR8R. You will get great tips about your career. You'll get honest insights. You'll get the occasional pet picture, and you will learn how to take proactive control and take charge of your career.
Very good. Very good. That's sickpodcast.com, S-Y-C-K. For your host, Alan Stein, I'm Russ Reba, and we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. You are going to love the next one.